Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And you know what? Speaking of Cambridge Inside Out, you should mention that early American cable systems, as part of the contract, they provided in-house studio for Cambridge Inside Out.
Actually, that's right? That's one of those things that did change
that
over
did
time.
That did disappear in
so
the
in, 90s. In, it was, like I think it was as a result of some of the changes at the federal level.
Right.
What happened was is that by that time it was called Continental Cablevision.
Oh, and, it morphed into that.
And then it
that's
was
right.
Media One
Media
or something
One
like that.
Media One or AT&T.
And they had studios up on Sherman Street, North Cambridge.
Right, that's right.
And that's where Glenn Kuchar and Barbara
that
Ackerman and Marty
Cambridge
Foster
Inside
and Tommy Rafferty.
They
ran.
Sondra Graham.
And Sondra Graham. They ran. And Barbara Ackerman. Did I mention Barbara Ackerman?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, they ran the original Cambridge Inside Out off of, and they had studios.
Was it once a week?
They would record several shows at a time.
Oh, right. That makes sense, because studio shows are usually done like that.
Yeah. But they had a full professional staff in there.
Oh, yeah. It was produced.
It was
not
super production.
It's nice to see us, but this is single camera.
We're
don't
amateurs.
Fool around.
Yeah.
It's just whatever. You
right.
can see what you get. You
so
get
they could
you
have
see.
Multiple cameras and
right.
a circle, you know.
They had a staff.
It was based on the model of the McLaughlin Group.
And also what they do in GBH, or what they did then back in their local news.
Same
kind of thing.
So, but the thing is that just to show you, when the federal regulations change, how it does affect us locally.
So that's why it changed?
So that's why it changed.
But what administration was that? Was it Republican? Democratic?
I think it was actually during...
Reagan!
I think it was actually...
Because Reagan was there
around the year 2000 when it ended. So the thing is that... There was a lot of changes that actually happened during Clinton's years, actually.
That were good or bad?
Well, the thing is, they were trying to grow the internet, and they were basically giving a lot of incentives to take out telecommunications companies to rapidly deploy.
Interesting.
Just to sort of make internet sort of be the thing, which is in fact what happened.
Yeah.
And so the industry people basically said, no, don't restrict us this way. You give us a right to do this, that, and the other thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And part of that kind of, some of the things that were good benefits locally here were all swept away in that wave.
Interesting.
So.
Well, at least that part. I mean, you
right.
still could.
So
CCTV still existed.
I still have that email message from Glenn Kuchar. I actually put it in plastic. I keep it there. We basically said, okay, well, that's the end of Cambridge Inside Out from the old version. It says, it's all on you now, buddy.
So when did that end?
And then I've kept Cambridge Civic Journal in many respects as sort of a way of keeping the flame alive.
When did you revise Cambridge Inside Out with Susanna?
Actually, that's Susan Fleischman here pretty much suggested that we do it. We just needed a name, so we asked Glenn if we could steal the name.
Thank you, Susan. Fleischman?
Yeah. So that was actually 2013. Yeah.
So she only did a couple of years.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, but the point is that there's been changes and there will be other changes to happen. And
yes.
I would hope that in the future, that we can find some sort of a predictable landscape so that people who want to do good programming locally can do it and it can kind of, and know that it's going to persist.
And you know what my wish is? That all committee reports, all committee meetings can be televised.
Well,
so
more and more are, from the city council.
Well, they have to request them.
It's
have
true.
To request
it's
to
true.
Have it televised.
Yeah.
The equipment's there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my pet peeve.
All right. So one other item that was part of the city council agenda last night that I find interesting, only because I have a bit of a personal history with this, where there were multiple things relating to the proposed path along the Grand Junction Railroad.
Oh my gosh, that was a biggie. There was both the city manager agenda items and also policy orders too?
Yeah, and I actually remember because I don't know if this was the first time anybody talked about doing this, but I remember being on the Green Ribbon Open Space Committee back in the late 90s.
Right.
And one of the things I remember talking about, because there were two people on our committee who were from East Cambridge, and they were, even though East Cambridge actually has access to more parks than places like Mid-Cambridge have, but the thing is that they wanted better access to more things. And I remember saying, one way you can do this is if you had a direct path where people could bike along the Grand Junction Railway, they could access places like Magazine Beach where there's ball fields and you could get through the riverfront that way.
But that involves a lot of different
a lot of players, right.
A lot of players.
But, it's kind of interesting.
And
you know,
real
you,
trains.
You toss an idea out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I was the only one doing this.
I don't think
but
you
I'm
were,
sure I was.
Robert.
Wasn't. But the thing is that I do remember proposing this, and as well as there was also a spur that used to come up behind the old Necco building, part of which is now a bike path
right.
as well.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's kind of interesting. If you stick around long enough, you can have ideas floated up by you or the committee that you're a part of, which actually, if you wait long enough, might actually come into fruition.
You mean like that
fruition.
Bridge in Alworth?
Well, not everything gets built.
Right.
Yeah. But,
anyway,
you know, but
yeah.
building bridges up in Alewife is complicated by the fact that, you know.
Again, they don't own the land under.
They don't. But, you know, yeah. even if it was, before we talked about that bridge, there was a talk about having a bridge, just a pedestrian bridge connecting Fresh Pond Mall over to Bridge Towers. And because there people had died trying to run across the railroad tracks. And then the problem was, is that you could build a good bridge. You just walk up the stairs, over you go, drop down the
yeah.
stairs. It wouldn't comply with the Americans with Disabilities
right.
Act.
It'd have to be a ramp.
And so in order yeah. to comply with the Americans with Disabilities mm-hmm. Act, the price tag is five times as much.
Yeah.
So what that meant yeah. is that nothing got built.
Right.
So, you know, so it's not as, one of the reasons why it's
things
so hard
yeah.
to make good things happen is because
costs money.
Good intentions sometimes
yeah.
Well,
it's
harder.
Either it comes down to money and who owns it,
yeah.
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which is maybe
oh, yeah.
the same
yeah.
thing. Anyway.
So anyway, so there were multiple items on the
yeah.
city council agenda about this. And again, I won't go into every little detail because obviously I don't know every little detail because I didn't read
it. Some were connected to the Millers River
Cambridge right.
Housing
so,
Authority.
So
yeah.
Millers River is right next to the railroad tracks,
mm-hmm.
the Grand Junction Railroad, at Cambridge Street. And, you know, you need a little bit of a right-of-way in order to do what the city ideally would love to have happen there. So there's part of the deal was a bit of a swap.
Right, for
I
their
think.
Demolish their community center.
Right, so
yeah.
so you get some right-of-way for the community, this Grand Junction Path, and the Housing Authority in exchange gets some resources to
Well, they
build
get
things.
A new community center, a renovated one in a different location.
Right. I think there was also
some
money
rehabs of, yeah.
And some
Plus
money
Plus a deal with
well.
Alexandria, though, right?
Well, see, now that's a different part.
That's
okay?
the different part. Okay.
So there was that piece. I think there was also another conveyance of a piece of land. It's, the city is proposing a Grand Junction overlay district of some
right.
sort.
Right.
But now, in the interim, Alexandria Properties has purchased, I believe it's the old Metropolitan Pipe site.
Ah, which is how... In proximity, how close is that?
Very close. It like borders right on the Grand Junction.
I know where
Railroad.
It's on Binney, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right where the bend yeah. on Binney is.
Right.
And you know that's just like a low scale warehouse
report,
site that's been there for a long time.
But I don't think we have that up
time.
Here, do we?
So in addition to these two items from
yeah.
the city manager that had to do with passing of a right of way and this deal
mm-hmm.
that was going on with the Cambridge Housing Authority.
Yeah.
You know, for the apartments there.
Yeah.
There was also a new zoning petition arrived
yeah.
from Alexandria Real Estate, which makes reference to their own version of an overlay district for the Grand Junction Path.
Okay.
But their deal they're offering, and I'm not offering any opinion on whether this is good, bad, or indifferent, but basically they're saying, we'll give you some right-of-way here, but we're doing it for price.
Yeah.
You got to give us this extra height.
120 feet.
Something like in that.
They have to change
range.
The zone. I forget what it was. A something or I don't know what it is. But
well,
it's not 120 feet.
Right. Well, the thing is that you can't just sort of say.
How many stories is 120 feet?
Depends. It's 12 residential and about 10 commercial
okay.
stories. Because I don't know if that's changed at all, but.
And what is this across the
you
street?
You usually figure
what
10
is this,
feet is a residential
story.
19 for Mass and Main.
Okay, so it would be
yeah,
two thirds of
that. 190 feet there. So this would
be 120, they
yeah.
said. So two-thirds of that. That's not small.
No,
but
it's
not
small.
Overwhelming.
Right,
but yeah.
you know, but it there were some people came up at public comment
yeah.
from some of the East Cambridge groups who were not pleased.
Right, because they live, most of those houses are just double-deckers.
Well, you
or,
know,
yeah.
for better or worse, what happened where Boston Woven Hose used to be located along Portland Street.
It was pretty industrial down there.
Which is now Bishop, yes, that was very industrial.
Yeah.
So when Boston Woven Hose was cleared out, they put in these homes, which are actually look like little single-family homes.
Oh,
it's
that's
very,
so that used to be
There's Michael Way, James Way, and
then another
one. Of course,
I know exactly. And those are all single, like little
very anomalous.
Right.
Very anomalous.
So that's the area that people are concerned about.
Well, yeah. So
okay.
Now it's a sort of an atypical.
It's not that near Metro. I mean, it's between Cambridge Street and
The thing. Right, now here's the catch.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit of history.
Okay, Mr. History.
All right, so the Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods, which sort of were the mainstays of promoting what became eventually the parking freeze, part of what really kind of kicked off that whole campaign was when the Binney Street Garage, which was part of the One Kendall Square development, went up effectively over the back fence of one of those houses on either Michael Way, James Way, or the other one.
Okay.
Right? You know, I remember seeing a picture in the Cambridge Chronicle of a woman, and I'm spacing out her name, and I know her, which is really kind of embarrassing. Just sort of standing in her backyard, looking at this structure going up, and
there. And when was this?
Probably early '90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So the thing is that so that's the precedent of somebody in one of those small houses seeing a large structure being built over the back fence. In this case, over the back fence is the railroad right-of-way, and then over the fence on the other side of the railroad tracks is where MetPipe is.
Exactly. Right.
So so now they're talking about looking out and basically about 25 feet away from your yard, maybe, I don't know if it's 25, 30, 35 feet away would be where,
But you have Kendall Square buildings are up all around there.
Well, but the thing is, there is a difference perceptually between having one that's like 30 feet
smack
back behind your backyard and a block away, right? Now, you know, listen, I don't know. We're all supposed to be embracing heightened density now because, you know, hey, man, it's the new millennium.
Yeah,
right?
But is this a residential building or is it going to be commercial?
No,
it's
this
commercial.
Will be Alexandria ain't building residential.
Right.
There. They're building.
And where's the parking going to go?
Or
they have limited parking.
They would have to incorporate some parking into it.
Well, what's the building going on next to the Kendall that has been under that corner before you get the Kendall
I know
cinema,
what you mean, and I could
right
I
off of
remember.
Portland Street.
Yeah.
Isn't that also Alexandria?
That's like Little Binney. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's exactly right in front of those houses.
Well, actually, it's coupled in with where the cinema is.
Yeah, but it's on that corner. You go, you turn that corner, and that whole corner
is
being developed.
But you already have those buildings built. So this
I saw vacants. It was a hole when I saw it many months ago.
Right, but they used to be building there. Yeah. So
but was it a commercial building?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what the height of it is. That's all I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, that's going to be an issue. Now, the truth is, so the parts from the city manager having to do with, the granting of the right of way and whatever.
The
easement. That was
18.
It's non-controversial.
Right.
But now we have the Alexandria zoning petition, and we'll see how that plays out.
So that was an application petition, and that was charter. No, that was
no.
Charter,
it's just pass it through. It's referred to ordinance committee and planning board.
Oh, it will be.
I think it is.
It
has been. Yeah.
There's no opposition from.
Well, the thing is that it's a formal referral.
Whenever
a zoning petition comes in,
and
it's
the planning
not that
board, then they get to do.
The
some
planning board
stuff
will
with
chime
it.
In. The city council ultimately will decide.
What about so community development does not have anything to do with it, or?
Well, I mean, the thing is, they have staff for the planning board.
Right.
So
right. Okay.
Very
there you
much
go.
Have
all
a lot
right.
to do with it, I imagine.
Okay.
You know, and there's, so there's
oh,
probably
I know.
Some
it was
room
started,
for bargaining
that was,
in there.
We should mention at the end. Yeah.
So
yeah, okay. So,
so anyway,
that's
so,
yet to yeah.
Yeah, so, but it's funny because Grand Junction was they had big ribbon cuttings for some pieces of this some time ago, and then it's sort of been just sort of lying in the background, and then all at once there's like three items having to.
But
do
if
with
you
it
look at that map, I wish you had a photo of it because it's in the attachments. There was you could see the different sections that aren't owned by everyone. There's like four different entities that have control over that whole.
Yeah.
Pathway.
That's right.
So you have to get
And Iran Farouk from CDD was describing how MIT has control over a lot of it. So they've done
some
successful
moves. And then
so
Boston,
the state has some control
who
over it.
Who controls it at the other end where West Station was, people want West Station, over.
I don't know about that. But the thing is that the.
Yeah.
So you can have
a
Grand Junction. Path that even went just as far as the BU Bridge in Magazine Beach, it would still be a pretty good resource.
Right, which I think is what Cambridge is aiming for. People
right.
in
if
the grander scale want a train that goes from... You
well,
know,
actually, that's one thing that I had sort of forgot about.
Yeah.
And I was hearing Iran Farouk speak about last night, is that so many people, when they think of the path, they think like the community path in Somerville, which is just a bike and pedestrian way.
But this actually had actual trains.
Right, and you know, you could do this as that,
but then it gets to be dangerous.
But I think the city staff seem very, very solidly in favor of making sure this is not just bikes and pedestrians, but also a shared path where there's also transit.
Well, because that is on a larger scale. A lot of people in the state are looking at that, or a lot of advocates for.
So you could, for example, have light rail, like trolley line running along there. That's a potential.
Big fences, though, because if you have bikes and rail, whatever.
Right, but the thing is that a trolley, I mean, you just think about Commonwealth Avenue in Boston. The thing is that you can have a right-of-way with trolleys running in there right at street level.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a trolley by the time they build this, but you're right.
No,
yeah.
But it could be the same type of rolling stock that they have on
Greenwood. But it should connect to, they want to connect it to North Station.
Right.
That was the idea.
Yeah.
That would be beautiful.
But if you think about it, you could actually have a trolley that connects that way.
Yeah.
You know, that just bends its way back and goes out toward Alston.
It's a work in progress. It's going to be years, I think. I mean,
that would be a trolley that, by the way, on the other end, on the Boston end, if it were to go close to West Station, would actually serve Harvard's new campus over there
Well, that's why they want, I mean, the whole throat.
Yeah.
That whole discussion, all that's involving all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. This is it's like a cornucopia for transportation planners.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, you know, it was funny how something is sort of docile for a while and then it comes back.
Yeah.
Or I should say dormant for a while. Not
well,
docile,
what got it going? Because Alexandria bought Metropolitan Pipe.
I think that's maybe spurring things, but also the fact is that there is already renovation planned now that the.
Right.
There was, that Brown petition was going to put a damper on the ability to the Millers River reconstruction, which is long overdue. Mm. So once that was settled, when they asked the Brown petition,
kind of went ahead. Yeah.
Then that started the wheels going for Millers River, which then opens up the doors for the possibilities of doing some of these swaps to settle the right of way for the Grand Junction path as well. So that's probably the reason why the timing worked out the way it did.
Okay.
But anyway, it's an interesting thing. Actually, you mentioned one other thing about transportation. so it was a minor thing, but there was a city council order, I forget which council, maybe it was Devereaux and Kelly, about having to do with the Davis Square reconfiguration.
Yeah, I didn't read that. What was that about?
Well, the thing is that, there's this Davis Square neighborhood plan, which is part of a bigger plan, that basically wants to reconfigure Davis Square in Somerville. Now, if some of you know the way Davis Square is configured now, this College Avenue is two-way, but then Holland Avenue
Elm,
is one-way, and then if you bang back on Elm, it's one-way, up to Russell Street, and whatever. So they want to completely remake this so that it's primarily two-way streets all around.
Ooh.
But what they're going to do is right where all the roads converge, right in the middle of Davis Square, they're going to bring them together for just a standard... intersection, right? Two-way this way, two-way this way. I think only one street, one way coming in from the south, from Cambridge.
Hmm.
But so why is this relevant here? Well, the thing is that when you do a reconfiguration of a roadway in Somerville, it has an effect on Cambridge traffic.
Sure.
You know, we don't live on little private islands here. Mm-hmm. Just like when there's reconfiguration or construction going on in Union Square, Somerville, it affects what's happening along Prospect Street in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And when we do things in Cambridge, it very much affects and spills over to Somerville.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest gripes amongst many with the Envision Cambridge I personally have is the fact that we talked early on about the importance to talk about planning regionally and thinking regionally. Mm-hmm.
And none of that was done.
It just never happened, you know. So whenever I see something like this with the city council saying, well, you know, Somerville's doing this, maybe Cambridge ought to be paying attention to this.
Mm.
I'm thinking, yeah, maybe Cambridge ought to be paying attention to this.
Mm.
Maybe we need some Envision for that.
Now, that was just passed without discussion, right? Because I don't
There's nothing really to say, but I think in some ways, sometimes the city council order is a way of not only saying the city staff start thinking about this, but also to alert your fellow councilors to start thinking about this.
Right.
You know, so... But anyway, I find things like that kind of interesting, maybe because I'm a bit of a transportation geek a little bit myself. So anyway, actually, last night was actually there. I think if you think about it, there were three new zoning petitions.
Let's see. There were the Okay, the Grand Junction overlay. All right.
No, actually, So yeah. That's from Alexandria. So they put in a privately generated petition to do that swap with the Grand Junction. So that's one.
And then what?
All right, so
the cannabis. Have something to do with cannabis?
No, because that's already in process. Oh. Okay.
That'll get settled soon. No.
That's right.
That's a zoning thing, the flat roofs?
It is, yeah. So it says what's permissible. It's land use regulation.
All right.
So the thing is, that's one that's already been proposed and gone through the process at least twice, but it failed to have a quorum at a planning board hearing, so it died, and now it's being resubmitted. So this basically gives property owners with flat roof buildings, like me, some options to put a pitched roof in, which would require adding a little extra height to your building, or otherwise reconfiguring to make things a little bit better. So I don't know where that's going. Some of the other city, it only passed five. The order only got a 5-4 vote because I think some city council said, "Well, this is not a high priority for us." But then again,
flat roof one.
So several of the city councilors just didn't even want to move it forward. It seemed to be like a little bit of testiness amongst councillors on that one.
But I thought the flat roof was very environmentally favorable.
I would argue that it is.
Well, who originally brought it up?
It was originally from Councillor Kelly.
And he was the one that said no.
And I think it was...
Wasn't he?
No.
Oh.
I think it might have been Kelly and Zondervan promoting it this time around.
So who... I don't...
I think it's actually an idea worth considering. Now, the second... The third.
Yeah. What was that one?
Petition is a reintroduction of... The order that the zoning petition having to do with accessory dwelling units.
Oh.
I think Carlone maybe put it in several months ago, but then it never had a hearing. So it never got any hearing.
I don't get why that. Is that the one where Alana Mallon just felt very confused about, wait, it didn't go to a petition, so why are we voting? Was that a different one? Maybe that was a flat roof.
You know, neither of them really got their full process.
Yeah.
So they've both been reintroduced.
Okay, so this is accessory. I thought that was the Patrick Barrett.
Well, the original one was for Patrick Barrett, but the thing is that for that, there were some provisions that could have been written into the accessory dwelling units at the time, but were not included. And then there was a list that I think Dennis Carlone got, maybe from something Patrick had provided.
Okay, so...
And then that becomes sort of the next
version. What happens now?
Well, now...
So the petition goes to the planning board?
It gets referred to planning board and ordinance committee for the full process. So this time, I imagine, they'll get their hearing.
But did you hear, though, in public comment, somebody that actually, and Carlone, that... He thought, and it sounded to me like rent control, that he thought that it should be required that they should be affordable units.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? Peter Glick, do you know
who he is? I know the name. Yeah. Right. So, now that's one of the things that actually becomes kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you say, okay, the city's going to allow you to do something.
Yeah, in your own home.
In your own home. But if you do it, then we got to get our fingers on it. You know, we have to sort of make it so that you're now required to make it available. You know,
can I just say something?
Candidates. If that's part of the rule, then nobody's going to take advantage of it.
I'm not going to name names here, but 20 years ago or whatever, in a 4-unit building, it was proposed by someone I know to add 2 units because they were very large and make them subsidized if he could have the 4. This is under rent control for the market rate, and they said no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying.
Right.
Here's somebody wanted to do that. And they couldn't. So now to tell someone who is in their own home, and this person actually said this was better than the affordable housing overlay thing, which would, and I didn't get that. I thought this is even more punitive.
You know,
I don't get it.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, basically, the city's housing policy can be summarized in one sentence, which is to take as many dwelling units out of private property and put them into public or social control as you possibly can. That's really what it comes down to.
Well,
so if they say, okay, we'll let you do some changes to your property, but only if we get control of the units.
Right.
Right, because that's our policy.
Well,
and you know what happens then? So somebody's going to say, well, we're not going to take advantage of that option then.
And Patrick Barrett, did you hear his comment?
I did a bit, yeah.
It was very good because he said, how come the small property owners don't have any say at that? In other words, Get those people together. Well, you're always talking to the big developers.
And he's absolutely right. Yeah. The thing is that the mindset right now is like, well, we're going to deal with Alex Twining, whatever, because we can get 60 units of affordable housing giving you whatever you want, right? Because it's all about generating those sort of social.
But those of you that own your own homes or have small units,
we're not even interested in talking.
Yeah,
to you.
We just think you need.
And if they say, well, we'll give you, the city will allow you to do things like, we'll give you some grants to do upgrades here, but the the price is that you therefore have to have your.
So then you had the policy 13. So we don't have much time, but that one really generated a lot of.
Right, so that was from Quentin Zondervan, and it was apparently in Portland, Oregon. This is something that's like a tenant relocation expense.
If you raise your rent more than 10%. I mean, there's certain reasonable things here, but it just sounded like it was really...
I'll speak personally, okay? So I have a triple-decker. I recently had an apartment.
But you are so not a good example.
I had very low rents, and then there was a tenant was going to be moving out. I was going to raise the rent. After having not touched it, it was ridiculously low, so it would have gone up a few hundred bucks.
Yeah.
It would have been in excess of 10%, but that's after many years of 0% increases.
Right.
And then we left on bad terms. And in fact, I would have had a tenant who says, well, now you have to give me $4,000 relocation expense if this had been the law.
And or I think only what actually they were paying for. But still, it had to be 2 months of disability. It's crazy.
Again, this is not to sort of come down on tenants or anything like that.
No.
But the thing is that when Councilor Zondervan or others introduce things like this, or the tenant right of first refusal, I take it as a personal insult.
Yeah.
The thing is that it's not about actually, it's not about doing right at all. It's just about gaining more control.
It's telling you what to do. It's saying we need affordable housing and we're trying. I mean, it is true. People are displaced and I think it's horrible.
I've been 35 years I was providing for affordable housing and the price I would get is going to say, oh, by the way, but now you have to pay an exit fee too. So
yeah, I know. But you're not
end of story
who they're
for,
really
for
looking
that.
At. You're not going to do that.
I know, but it would have affected me.
Anyway, it got charter-righted, which is a good idea.
Good idea.
Because it needed to have more.
Anyway, we'll talk more later. See ya.
Next week.